The numbers told the story, they always do.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Did I leave out anything? It's Gil Alexander. Jeff Parlay is here, producer number five. And hey, Jeff, you have some NBA stuff you wanted to say here?
Yeah, this is a little bit from Woj and Shams.
Woj bomb.
So, we'll put the tweets together
here. Is this a bomber grenade?
A little bit of both, I would say.
All right.
So starting January 15th, any NBA player who is not fully vaccinated will be unable to enter Canada to play games in Toronto.
Wow.
The Canadian government will require all individuals entering the country to be fully vaccinated. That is from both of them. If a player can't show proof of vaccination and misses a game in Toronto, he would be subject to reduction of compensation, maybe subject to fines, suspension, or other action. The NBA informed teams today. That's from Shams. The other one, which actually would be more important here, any unvaccinated NBA player with temporary visa status leaving the country would be unable to re-enter the United States as well, according to a memo that was obtained by Woj earlier today. For example, a player that would be unable to re-enter after playing in Canada, which they are not going to be allowed, an unvaccinated player would not be able to play in Canada, or traveling outside the United States on All-Star Weekend. So that is stuff to keep in mind. At least the Toronto thing is important and handicappable because there could be some players that miss games in Toronto now.
So the first part of the Woj thing is irrelevant because you couldn't get into Toronto in the first place, right, based on the Shams thing.
What happens if someone leaves the country and doesn't realize that they can't get back in during the All-Star break in February?
That's different. That's the second part of the Woj part. So is that second part, is that an NBA thing or is that just a governmental thing that just changed?
Like what
is
it? Looks like a governmental
thing.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
What I'm reading.
So the Toronto part is interesting. My girl is from Toronto, so she goes back and forth here, right between Toronto and Las Vegas. And every time she has to travel, because the Canadian government has very strict rules and regulations about this, I guess the NBA had a free pass that the rest of us mere mortals didn't have to, because every time she goes, you know, she's got to get a test, right, a negative test to get back into Toronto within, it was 72 hours before her flight. Now it's 24 hours before your flight, which, you know, is a pain, right? It's a pain in the butt. But, okay, that's their rules. And so now what we're hearing is that the NBA, the NBA is now just coming back to the rest of us, is essentially what the Canadian government is saying with that. They're saying, look, you don't get a free pass just because you're a ball player. You have to be vaccinated or you're not playing against the Raptors. Back in the day, obviously, they had the Vancouver Grizzlies, too. Now we don't have to worry about two teams, just one franchise in Canada. But that's interesting. Very interesting. When you listen, this was the downside of wanting to be, you know, global, right? The NFL had aspirations to be global. They played games in London. The NBA at one point had aspirations to be global. You don't anticipate a global pandemic where other governmental rules might impinge upon that. But here we're seeing a very low-key version of that with just north of the border. Fascinating. So what's the date on that? January 5th, you said?
15th.
15th of January. Basically giving folks a 1 month runway to get it done. If you're not vaccinated, you have Toronto on your schedule, teams should know this is where you have a conversation with the players. And if the players who don't want to get vaccinated period, then you just have to plan for them not playing in Toronto. But they will get their pay docked, as you said there. Let's go back to our initial conversation of the show that Drew Dinsick and I were having, Jeff, earlier about the Bills and the Patriots yesterday. How much of what we were saying do you agree with? How much do you disagree with? Basically, for those who missed it, I wasn't doing this just to be provocative, but everybody slurping on Bill Belichick this morning, I see it completely differently. I think he got away with the strategy yesterday. Completely got away with it. His defense bailed him out, same way that he got bailed out by Malcolm Butler in that Super Bowl when he should have called a timeout. Would have been the absolute GOAT, old school definition of GOAT, meaning the reason they lost by not calling a timeout earlier. He gets bailed out by Malcolm Butler in that Super Bowl. I think he got bailed out a couple times by the Patriots defense, which stopped the Bills in the red zone twice late. Bills couldn't come up with a single point in either of those two drives. And in the end, he had the whole second quarter with the wind behind him to do something about it. He didn't. He was like, it was like this thing like, okay, I get it, Bill, you're running, but now you have the wind on your side. Someone reminded me on Twitter. They're like, remember the 19, this will be before your time, Jeff, but the NFC championship game after the 1986 season. So it was Washington against the New York Giants. New York Giants went on to win the Super Bowl. But Washington was the team, you know, that was the rival. That was the team they had the hardest time. You know, that was the team they'd have to overcome. Washington was in the midst of winning Super Bowls. Washington was going to win another Super Bowl the next year. But they beat Washington for the third time that year, 17-0 in that NFC championship, a game where the wind was favoring one side of the field and not the other. And Bill Parcells played it perfectly, right? When the wind is with you, you play it a different way. When it's against you, you get it. You know, the punt, that was another thing. So Jake Bailey's first punt last night for the Patriots, he understood that he had to keep it low when going right to left on your television screen. The second one, he kicked right up in the air at, like, you know, Bills had the ball at the Patriots 40, but the Bills couldn't capitalize on it. So Bill Belichick, to me, he got to the victory because Sean McDermott was a worse coach than him, in the same way that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl last year in the NFC playoffs anyway, by just running into Jedi mind-tricking the opposing coach. Matt LaFleur comes to mind the biggest, where it's like, Matt LaFleur, where it's like, you weren't that great. You were just better than the opponent. So anyway, I throw it to you.
Well, isn't the game being better than your opponent, though?
No, 100%. But what I'm saying is people are like, oh, this is Bill Belichick's crowning moment. Like, he got away with it.
I'm not all the way in your camp on that. I think Belichick realizes his defense at this point might be the best current unit in the NFL at the moment. Now, I'm not saying that it will end up there, but they are the best defense at the moment in the league. And the wind was insane, which took away Buffalo's only real prospect of moving the ball, which was Josh Allen's arm. Which, by the way, Josh Allen made a few throws through the wind that were like, oh, my God, how did he do that?
Incredible.
I didn't think Allen played as poorly as some people made him out to be last night.
No, he was fine.
It was just horrible conditions.
They should have been running it. They should have been calling runs with him.
That was what I was just about to say. The one time that there was a designed run for Allen, he ran for 20 yards in the fourth quarter. I thought that game last night was more about Buffalo's failures than New England. More than anything.
I think that's my point, though. Yeah. I don't disagree with that.
I think Belichick also, it kind of showed us something with how much they truly trust Mac Jones.
Well, that's what I brought up earlier, too.
They're still not there yet.
Drew answered it perfectly. Yeah. I said, does he fully trust Mac Jones? And Drew said, I don't know about that, but he didn't want to find out.
Drew said it perfectly.
Perfectly.
Because also, too, the last thing you want for a rookie quarterback that had been rolling as well, bad weather game for the first time in his life, throws three interceptions and you lose. That's a step going backwards with bad mojo, but they're going into the bye week with a huge game coming out of it with Indy. Last thing you want is the last memory. Hey, I just threw three interceptions in a game, even though the weather was ridiculous. But for Buffalo, though, Gil, two things. And I'm pretty sure that McDermott could have done what I'm about to say after doing a little more research, even though I'm not 100% there on it. Second half. After deferring to the second half, Buffalo needed to take the wind in the fourth quarter instead of taking the ball in the third.
So we brought this up on Primetime Action last night. We couldn't identify the rule. We couldn't figure out if he could do that or not.
So based off the preliminary research I did after you brought that up to me again, it looks like he could have. Now, the official rule book is not 100% clear. That's the only issue with
right.
that. Based off the way I interpreted it, it looks like, yes, he could have.
Because we definitely brought it up. You're right about that. That would have been another error on his part.
Yeah, because if they have the wind in the fourth quarter, Bass can kick two field goals. That field goal where Tyler Bass doesn't miss field goals.
Shortest miss of his career.
Doesn't miss. He would have made that kick going the direction that Folk made his in the fourth quarter.
33 yards, I believe.
But in the end, though, Gil, every time Buffalo this year has played a run-heavy offense, they have been soft.
Yeah,
they have been
soft.
Beaten. And now, all of a sudden, a team that was a prohibited Super Bowl favorite a month and a half ago even, they might miss the playoffs.
When I lost that Survivor play on the Bills against the Jags, that was the word I used. They were soft. Let me ask you about the end of that first half. The end of the first half, too. I talked about how Belichick didn't take advantage of the win in the second half. That sequence at the end of the first half, and this is where I really faulted Belichick, he got 20 yards on that first carry of the final drive within 2 minutes of the second half. And so you're figuring, okay, well, maybe they weren't going to do anything with this, but now that you got 20 yards, clearly you're going to throw the football. You're going to do some stuff. Nope. He just kept running it. He was content to run out the clock. And then, strangely, with 37 seconds left in the half, Belichick changes his mind, and they do decide to call a timeout. I'm like, well, why would you have waited to call the timeout? Then after the timeout, they still keep running. And then you're like, okay, well, both teams are going to be content running, letting the clock run out. But no, then the Bills ridiculously call a timeout with 7 seconds left. And you're like, what are you going to do with that? Now the Patriots should throw a Hail Mary. And Belichick was like, nope, I'm still going to punt. Like, none of that made any sense. None of it.
The whole sequence was bizarre, to put it politely. 7 seconds. I would have taken the timeout if I were Buffalo.
Much earlier, if you're going to take
it. 11 seconds, because you're not throwing a Hail Mary with 11 seconds. 7, you could have. I'm just surprised that New England didn't even just take one shot.
But this is my point.
But again, I think Belichick was in the camp of, this team is not scoring us on us tonight.
Yeah, but that's results-oriented. All the Bills had to do was punch it in once. I know they didn't do it, but they had a couple drops. If I'll say it again, if New England loses that game by one possession, which was very possible, I go back to the second quarter and say, Bill Belichick, what were you doing? You got away with it again. History loves this man. We'll come back. Pete Futak, College Football next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The VSiN Bowl Betting Guide is almost here with everything you need to bet smarter on every bowl game. This year's guide provides matchup analysis on all 41 bowl games, including insights, trends, data, and predictions to help you make your best bets. The guide is designed to give you an edge whether you're betting on every game, playing contest, or just want to find a few key high-value props. The guide will drop in 6 days, December 13th. Make sure to get your copy today for only $19.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. So the College Football Betting Guide, Jeff, was $19.99, whereas the NBA and the NHL betting guides for the full season were $9.99. Wow, interesting. Football says something, doesn't it? Football is king, ladies and gentlemen. He's the king of collegefootballnews.com. It's Peter Futak, at Pete Futak, F-I-U-T-A-K on Twitter. How you doing, Pete?
All I have to say is God bless those beautiful human beings who are putting together your bowl guide, because I can tell you it's the hardest and weirdest thing to do, because we just found out these matchups on Sunday.
Yes.
And there, like you said, there's like, I mean, if you include all of them, there's like 44 of them. I think you're including 41 on this without the playoffs and the Celebration Bowl. And like, it's so much stuff to pack into now. I'm sure they're going to press soon. So as we speak, I know exactly what they're doing. It's all coffee. It's all caffeine all the time, because it is a race to get there fast.
Well, I used to do, whether it was Beating the Book or Betting Dork before that, I used to do podcasts where we would do every single bowl game. We'd like break it up into parts. And it was always, this is the thing about college football bowl season, which we haven't said yet on this show this year, but it deserves an annual mention, which is...
And worse than ever, yes.
And worse than ever, right. So before the opting out, right, college football bowl season was always difficult because you had to handicap the motivations, right? If a team, you know, wanted to have a better bowl and they had to settle for a bowl, you just never knew. If there was regional home game-ish kind of bowls, you had to keep that in mind. If there were coaches, not only head coaches but coordinators, who were on an interim basis, or, you know, if someone had already left, or if, you know, you didn't know if they would play for this guy or if they would, it was all that, you know, mishugas. Now it's, you don't even know who's going to play ultimately. So I don't know that if I were still doing the bowl podcast, I don't know if I'd even do them anymore, because I'd be like, why are we going to do 40 of these, bust our ass doing this? And then in the end, like a quarter of them aren't going to be valid in the end.
Totally. And you're absolutely right. And like, I'm doing this for the US as we speak, the USA Today print version of this. And like, you can't include so many players because you just don't know. Because like, you know, even like, it's not even the biggest guys. I mean, even guys like Carson Strong, the Nevada quarterback, he's kind of hit or miss on whether or not it's going. And then you get Jay Norvell, who's leaving Nevada for Colorado State. Like, the coaching carousel is just so wacky right now. It makes these bowl games, so to the point of, you know, what you do and all of this, really there's two ways to look at it. Either you can kind of sort of figure out this now and realize that the lines might be skewed in some ways, or you wait till the last possible second, because sometimes you're going to place a wager now on something like, yeah, that looks like it's a good bet, and all of a sudden 10 guys decide not to play. So this is a rough go. This is not an easy exercise by any means.
Well, and this is it, we always talk about how, you know, look, we fill hours and hours of content with pre-flop ATS thoughts, right? And that's justifiable, because that's what you're going to talk about when games aren't going on. But there is no better betting vehicle for in-game betting than college football bowl season. Man, because all the things we just talked about, you watch.
And COVID.
Yes.
And COVID
on top of it.
The championship, that hit us out of the blank. Last year, the San Jose State team got whacked at the last second, and Ball State, you know, cranked it up. Like, this is, like, you get, this is why it depends on how your risk tolerance. Either there's great value now, or like you said, you wait till this thing happens, because there's going to be one team that all of a sudden on day of game, there's going to be, you know, 15 guys that are out all of a sudden that we didn't, you know, know about before.
Or you watch a few drives, right? You watch each team go on one or two drives, and then you're like, oh, I see. Team X is not here today, and Team Y cares deeply. That kind of
thing. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's exactly. Obviously hovering. Okay, there's so much to talk about here. Let's start with something I hadn't talked about earlier with Jeff, which is Heisman. We know the four finalists. It's Bryce Young, it's C.J. Stroud, it's Kenny Pickett, and it is Aiden Hutchinson. It's Young, right? This is done.
How can it not be? You know, I will not reveal my vote as a Heisman voter, all disclosure. But, like, I will be shocked if the public out there does not go for it. I mean, think about it. There wasn't really a Heisman number one guy in there. And we're, like, waiting to say, okay, what would happen if Bryce Young rocked Georgia? Well, Bryce Young rocked Georgia. Throw on top of that the first in 97 against Auburn when they were down 10-3 just to get here. And they went from they're dead. They have 97 yards to go. They only scored 3 points in Auburn. That's it for the Alabama season, to now being the college football playoff number one seed. The question is, who's number two? I mean, I think it's going to be Aiden Hutchinson just because. But look, Trevor Lawrence was number two last year, and the guy didn't do anything really that Heisman worthy all year. So far be it for me to know the total whims of the Heisman voter out there.
There are the BetMGM numbers. Bryce Young now -5,000. Aiden Hutchinson 16-1. Kenny Pickett 30-1. C.J. Stroud, who will always have that one half of football, 40-1. For the Heisman. So that appears to be done. All right, let's start with the national semifinals. I was talking earlier about it. Oh, it's the New Year's Eve national semis. It's the worst. Isn't the Rose Bowl, doesn't that control when these are played? The national semis?
Something like that. It's the date and timing and all that. But it stinks. Not that, like, I'm going to go live it up at this point in my career on New Year's Eve. But it just for national attention and things, it just, look, I'll be in Miami for this. And it's interesting. And then it's like, yay, New Year's. But, okay, they just played the game. It's just not as much fun.
I'm not going to let you do that. You're going to be in Miami for this, are you?
I will be in Miami. Oh. Well, I'm going to be in Florida, so I might as well just run over to Florida and catch the game anyway. So I will be in it.
All right,
yes.
So first of all, shout out to you, because you said Alabama money line against Georgia. So let's give it up for Peter Futak, everybody.
Yes, give it up for me, because that's like the one thing I got right all of championship weekend. I pretty much whiffed everything else, but that one I will hang hat on, yes.
Bama by 13.5 over Cincinnati. Your thoughts?
Hate everything about it. Look, at the end of the day, Alabama's still the team that needed that big drive to get more than 3 points against Auburn. It's still the team that struggled against Arkansas and LSU and had all those issues that made everyone think, like, and this is just not the year for Alabama. There is something to be said for the desperation. They got there in the SEC championship, and they performed kind of at another level they weren't at all year long, except for maybe the Ole Miss game. But it's Cincinnati. You know how I feel in my Power 5 snobbish and my love of Alabama in terms of just betting. So it gets everything against in me to not take Alabama. I just sort of think that regular season Alabama is more like it, and I think Cincinnati's probably going to cover, but give me a few weeks and I might change my mind on that.
Okay. Michigan, 7.5-point dogs. They've been 8. I'm seeing in some spots against Georgia, the other semi. The one, as I said earlier, where the wife and the girlfriend is screaming from the other room if you're on the East Coast. Can we go already? You can't watch the rest of this game.
I, as wishy-washy as I was on that first call, I'm going to be all in on this one. I'm just going to just drive right through it and say, and go all in my thought process that Georgia's about to rip through this thing. I think that Georgia team that showed up in the SEC championship, again, there's a weird little motivation twist. Of course they wanted to beat Alabama. Of course they wanted to win the SEC championship. Didn't matter for them, mattered for Alabama. Alabama played like it, Georgia didn't. That defense really is that good. And now they're not the number one anymore. Now they're the number three seed. This is Alabama's thing. Now, I think we are about to see the real Georgia defense hit Michigan very, very hard. And as much as we all love Michigan, this is a different team. There's a difference between playing the Big Ten, even Ohio State this year, and Georgia and what it's going to do. I think Georgia's going to take this to another level. The one thing that kind of freaks me out a little bit is the Stetson Bennett factor. You saw it when he got pressed, what happened? Pick six kicks in. So the Stetson Bennett factor scares me a little bit, but I think we are about to see the real Georgia, not just in this, but in the national championship as well.
All right, we have a minute before the break, Pete. And in the end, as big a consensus as we've ever had in the end, right? It's Alabama, Michigan, Georgia, and Cincinnati. What would you like to say to all the folks who wasted hours and hours of time complaining about the rankings, the first 5 iterations of this?
If Desmond Jackson had turned the corner just a half step faster, we'd be having a very, very different conversation right now, because it would have been a coin flip between Oklahoma State and Cincinnati for that slot. But again, like we always say, wait until the very end. And as Gil Alexander told me, it always works out.
Let the games play out before you go crazy about it, right? Like, let it then have the debate.
But what fun is that?
I know.
It always works out.
By the way, Desmond Jackson, when that play was developing, I was like, oh, he's so easily scoring. Oh, my God, he has no chance. Like,
I have 3 running back friends of mine who texted me after that. Like, I was in. I'm 45 years old. I'm in on that play.
Every running back who's ever played would have scored on that play. Like, how could he not have scored?
Exactly.
It's fine. We'll come back. Pete's favorite bowl spreads next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The VSiN holiday offer is here right now. When you sign up for a $99 midseason football special, you also receive a $20 credit to the VSiN store. Get all of our expert sports betting analysis, insights, and data for the rest of the football season, plus $20 to buy VSiN sports betting hats, shirts, mugs, and other great gear. It is a limited time offer, though, so sign up now for the perfect sports betting holiday gift at VSiN.com/subscribe. Jeffrey, get me that spreadsheet. Want to order so people have it for the holidays. It's already December. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Pete Futak back with us once again. Pete, before we get to your bowl game, your favorite bowl games here, can we play a little, can we have a little NFL draft sports radio talk here for a second?
Please, let's go.
I'm looking at the current draft order. So if the NFL season were to end now, which this just in, it is not ending. But if it were, this is the order. Detroit goes first. They could use a quarterback. Jacksonville second, Trevor Lawrence, no quarterback. Houston goes third, they could draft a quarterback. Fourth is the Jets, it's too soon with Zach Wilson.
No.
Fifth is the Jets, sixth is the Giants, and 7 is the Giants. You figure with one of those two, would they draft a quarterback? Are they still like Daniel Jones? I don't know. 8 is Atlanta, come on, they got to draft a quarterback. 9 is Carolina, they could probably draft a quarterback. 10, yeah. 10 Minnesota, 11 New Orleans, they could probably draft a quarterback. I mean, there's so many of these teams, right? There's just not enough. There's not enough good quarterbacks in the NFL. So there's, as there is with every year, a need for quarterbacks. And so my question to you is, are there any good ones that would be pro-ready?
Pro ready, yeah. Kenny Pickett could slide right in. I think Sam Howell could slide right in. There isn't the Trevor Lawrence of last year, and I don't think there's give it a few more years. I don't think there's a Trey Lance in this either. And Mac Jones has obviously come out of, I don't want to say come out of nowhere, but he went from being like, okay, a pretty decent option to obviously being the perfect guy for the perfect coach and the perfect team. So Pickett seems like the one who could probably step in right away and start for you. Is he the franchise be-all, end-all guy? I'm not quite there. Sam Howell's all right, but I like quarterbacks who are 6'3", 220, and that's more Pickett than Howell. And certainly through this process, other guys are going to rise up and rock in this. But really right now, it's probably Pickett's number one slot to lose, and he's going to show it off in this bowl game.
And where would Kenny – if Kenny Pickett were drafted last year, let's say Kenny Pickett had this college football season – but he had it last year, and he was coming out with Lawrence, Jones, Fields, Wilson.
Lance,
the fifth one. Where would he rank in that group of six?
Well, there's a reason he came back. He certainly did not have the great numbers last year, but that was part of the reason he bet on himself. He's probably a fourth or fifth round pick. I actually don't like him as much as I like Davis Mills. I kind of you mentioned Houston there. I'm a Davis Mills guy. I kind of think he, with time and with actual talent around him, he's actually a pro quarterback. The question on Mills is, can he stay healthy? And that team's just trash, so that's not fair to judge him yet.
Did you?
And the Vikings, Kellen Mond, they took him relatively early. They're not going to go after someone else quite yet. So this crop is okay. It's certainly not last year.
Did you just say you didn't like Kenny Pickett now as much as you like Davis Mills then?
I still love Davis Mills. I loved him then. I loved Davis Mills last year. He was one of my kind of guys. The question on Davis Mills isn't talent. It is health, because he could not stay healthy at Stanford. But in terms of all the pro tools and skills, it's all there. I just at some point we got to see him on a team that can actually do something with actual receivers to throw to.
Pete, I thought we were going to get through two segments without some outrage, but there we go. We have some outrage. So I guess the question would be then, all these teams we just listed that need a quarterback. So what you're saying is they shouldn't be drafting Kenny Pickett in the first round, because you know they're going to, right? Because these teams go nuts.
Definitely first round, maybe first overall. I mean, you know, but if you're the Lions, this is the time, like you kind of alluded to, trade down. I mean, because there are a bunch of very good quarterbacks out there. There isn't the franchise Trevor Lawrence guy, though.
Okay. What's your favorite bowl game? We talked earlier about the ones that have moved. Let me just list the ones that have moved the most. The teams where the lines have gone towards the most this far. You brought up Nevada, Western Michigan. No surprise that the number has gone to a pick 'em, basically, between Western Michigan and Nevada. UNC has gone through the 7 from 5.5 to 7.5. West Virginia took in some money in their bowl game. Tennessee, the favorite, has flipped from Purdue to Tennessee. And then Texas A&M has risen against the Wake Forest all offense, no defense deal. Those are the ones that moved the most. You understand all of those? You disagree with any of those?
I sure do. But the thing about it is pick a lane on Purdue, Tennessee, because everyone's leaving those games. Purdue probably is going to have a few more parts to this. So that's going to be like 38-10 one way or another. But that's still just such a crazy guess, because, you know, Purdue's got the guys, but Tennessee's got the offense. That's going to be a weird one. I'm curious in the West Virginia, Minnesota one. What's the latest line at that? Where did that flip to?
West Virginia, Minnesota, latest number.
It's four, right?
What is it? What is that one, Jeff? West Virginia, Minnesota. Yeah, it's four.
It's Minnesota four.
Yeah. And it was 6.5 at the open.
I love Minnesota in this. I mean, PJ Fleck still around, that team still in place. They get time to heal up a little bit. That offensive line. PJ Fleck does not normally lose non-conference games except to Bowling Green, much less bowl games. They've been able to rise up each and every year. West Virginia is kind of an eye team. I think that four is definitely one for Minnesota going that way. The one I'm loving more than anything else is what kind of what I call the disappointment bowl this year, your Radiance Technology Independence Bowl, which we were promised by everyone who was associated with bowls. It was going to be BYU and UTSA. The Conference USH at the time was going to be, you know, an undefeated UTSA, and then they lose their last game. They don't even try. And then they win the Conference USA Championship versus BYU. That was going to be one of the better bowl games. Not to program shame, but UAB's okay, not great. I think BYU comes in and just steamrolls the Blazers. I love BYU giving away just the 7 on that.
You are the first person not to answer Notre Dame to that question. What is the bowl spread you
nothing.
Love the most?
I want nothing to do with that game because that is, you know, the whole Marcus Freeman, oh, we're going to care, we're going to try.
Right.
That's fine. But we don't. But usually, who's the team that gets really disappointed and is really down and, you know, got their heart broken? Those are usually the teams that don't show up for these bowl games. That's not going to be Oklahoma State. This might be kind of the vengeance thing. It's like, wait a minute here. You know, we pretty much gagged away the Big 12 championship. I think they show up because most of those guys are coming back. They're not losing a ton of pro prospects. Spencer Sanders was awful in that game. I think he comes back roaring. I think that defense comes back and rocks. Mike Gundy, though, is extremely hit or miss in bowl games. I don't want anything to do with this because we don't know what Oklahoma State's going to bring. And I am not buying in the, oh, just because Marcus Freeman there and everyone's going to care that Notre Dame's just going to rip through Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I find that to be very lazy analysis. People are like, oh, they love Marcus Freeman. They're going to crush in this game. That's New Year's Day, of course, between the Cowboys and the Irish. What about December 29th? Because this one sort of sticks out to me. Did you see Oregon play in the Pac-12 championship? Oh, my God.
Here's the problem with that, though. There's two ways to look at that with Oregon. One, really hurt. I mean, they just don't have the guys left. If they had their full starting 22 and depth, I still think that they played Utah a whole lot better than that. The other problem with this is, here's the part about dealing with bowl games. You have guys like Kayvon Thibodeau, who had nothing to do with college football from the start. He was ready to turn pro instantly, and now he's opting out. But there's two ways to look. Either you're missing some of those pro guys who are opting out, but on the flip side, you're getting the guys who are stepping in who really want to play and are good enough. The question on Oregon is the coaching, the consistency, anything. This is a good Oregon team that's still got a whole lot of talent there, so I'm not just buying in that Oregon's just going to get destroyed in this.
Oklahoma only laying 3.5 in some spots in that ball game. Army.
Oh, that's a team that's a mess, too. We don't even know if Caleb Williams might be on a plane to L.A. as we speak. So there's a whole lot of factors in this one.
Real quick before we go here, any Army-Navy thoughts this weekend?
Obviously, the never know always go under on this because the military academies always play really close, low-scoring games. If
finally adjusted on the total, 33.5 now. Yeah.
All right, fine, over. You have to, just on principle alone. But usually these things are 14-7. But I like Army, and now I guess I like the over after they adjusted because that's just 33 is just too ridiculous.
All right, we'll get one more chance to talk about this beforehand. But the first bowl day is December 17th, features a couple MAC teams. Toledo facing Middle Tennessee State, which, if I recall, you had like 118th out of 130 before the season started in your D1 rankings.
And they're still that good. By the way, they're still right around 118 in terms of talent, but yes.
But basically, Toledo laying 10 against them, and then Coastal laying 10 against Northern Illinois, the MAC champs. Any thoughts on those two?
Like Northern Illinois to hang around with Coastal Carolina. They're able to crank things down a little bit. Toledo, that Bahamas Bowl is always really bizarre. I will take Middle Tennessee, though, just so they take the ball away a ton.
Okay. Peter, well done on Alabama. We'll talk many times before the bowls. Enjoy doing all your write-ups. That should be fun.
God, pray for me. But thoughts and prayers this way.
Thoughts and prayers for Pete Futak, navigating through that. Pete Futak at Pete, FIUTAK on Twitter. Jeff and I will talk NFL Week 14 next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game. Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, welcomes you with a special offer on college basketball. Simply place a $10 moneyline wager on any game. If either team hits a three-pointer in the game, you'll win $200 in free bets, regardless of your bet's outcome. Just use bonus code VSiN200 when you make your first bet. Enjoy college hoops like never before with BetMGM all season long. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com and use bonus code VSiN200 to win $200 in free bets if a three-pointer is made in the game you wager on. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi or Nevada. Skill Alexander. Well, Jeff, I thought we were going to get through that PFU tax segment without some outrage, but as at Lutz Cody 182 mentions on Twitter, he says this joker really compared Kenny. This joker really compared Kenny Pickett to Davis Mills. Numbers don't lie. Time to ban Pete from the show. Seriously, this was the most outrage I think I've had about a PFU tax segment since the Dan Mullen incident, where I made poor Ann in the corner uncomfortable by virtually screaming at Futak for defending Dan Mullen week after week. And then, of course, the next week he was canned, and I couldn't wait to talk to him again. Anyway, we love Pete, but it's only a matter of time before he says something provocative like that. Jeff Parlay is here as well. Jeff, we were talking about quarterbacks going in the first round there a second ago. Who do you draft? Any of the teams I mentioned, like, who do you draft of those guys? Is it Pickett?
I think by default, I think it has to be. Again, that's great logic for taking a quarterback in the top 10 by default, but you know how teams in the NFL draft panic and take quarterbacks.
They go quarterback crazy.
That shouldn't be drafted that early.
And justifiably, by the way, because it's a quarterback league, so I get it. But
yeah,
if it's not there, it's not there, right?
Yeah, it's Pickett. It's Wills from Liberty, who I just don't see it at all. With him, I played poorly against some mediocre competition this year. When he played the good teams on Liberty's schedule, he did not look good. He looked terrible against Syracuse. Great defense in Syracuse, obviously. He looked terrible against Ole Miss. But I don't see it at all. Matt Corral's an interesting one, but I'm just concerned he won't be able to stay healthy throughout an NFL slate. And then Sam Howell, who put up good numbers, but obviously that team disappointed in big fashion this year. By default, it's Pickett would be my number one quarterback off the board.
Yeah, I guess. Detroit's going to take him with the number one overall pick, though? Like, are they going to do
again,
that?
Well, here's the ridiculous thing. By the virtue of that tie that Detroit had, if Detroit gets one more win, which now that they busted the seal, they might be able to get a second one. Houston, I don't think, is winning another game. So that might be the Texans picking a number one. Then you might get your Davis Mills versus Kenny Pickett comparison, Gil.
I'm just looking at Mel Kiper here real quick. So he did this, 3 weeks ago? He does not have a quarterback going, I don't believe, in the entire first round. Let me see.
He
has Pickett. He has Pickett going 20th.
Two?
Well, the problem with this is
it was old.
It's old, and so I don't know, at what point. And when he's doing these mocks at this point, like, he's not even associating teams with them. So this is just his big board. Okay, never mind. This is not an order. This is just his big board. He's got Kenny Pickett as his 20th best player.
That seems about right.
So there you go. So let me be clear. So this is not a draft board. He does have Malik Willis going. He does have Malik Willis as his 25th best player in the draft. The quarterback from Liberty. But as far as quarterbacks, here's his order. Just one guy's opinion, right? Kenny Pickett first, Malik Willis second, Matt Corral third, Desmond Ridder fourth, Sam Howell fifth. But I mean, like, seventh is Hendon Hooker. Really? All right. Never mind about that. All right, what do you like best? What did you decide? You had a front row seat with guessing lines yesterday. What do you like best in week 14?
Well, I'm just going to preface everything by saying I am not, even though I think the line is probably off in the Raider-Chief game, like you said, I cannot bring myself to bet the Raiders in that game. I just can't bring myself to do it. I sure don't want to lay with Kansas City, but I can't bring myself to bet Vegas, who I think that game against Dallas was the last gasp game for the Raiders.
I will say this, because the four that I liked yesterday were the Falcons, which Drew liked also this morning, the Raiders, Washington, and what was the other one that I liked? Arizona a little bit. Those are the four that I really liked. But the thing with the Raiders is that it really does, like, some of these games are unbettable till you know who's playing, right? You can't bet the Raiders unless Darren Waller's playing. You can't bet the Saints unless you know that Kamara's playing. Can you bet the Niners until you know about Deebo Samuel? Like, that's, there's at least a, you know, there's at least a few games where it's not even worth talking about until you know the personnel on the field and those key players. You would agree with that about Waller, I would imagine. You just can't.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but my concern is when we saw these teams play 3 weeks ago, that the Gus Bradley lack of adjustment to the thing that slowed down Kansas City all year to, oh my goodness, we're facing a thing we destroy, and guess what? Kansas City destroyed it. I'm just concerned that Gus Bradley is so stubborn that he will not change, and we'll get a not quite the repeat we had a few weeks ago here in Vegas, but pretty close to it. So that's why I'm concerned. Again, I thought that line should have been 7. I thought 9, 9.5 is pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm just playing the number. I mean, it's too many points.
That would just be a pure number play, but I'm not truly interested.
But your point is well taken. Matt Brown, my co-host on Primetime Action, calls it the assumption of rational coaching, right?
Yeah.
You're assuming that the coaches are going to do what they're rationally supposed to do. You know what they say about assuming, Jeff.
I can't say it on the air.
It makes you regret your initial thought, I believe is what they say about assuming. I believe that's the statement. Yes.
All right, so I don't want to overreact to what we saw last night, but Tom Brady against Buffalo, and with the way that Tampa's offensive line has really just manhandled everyone recently, and the fact that Leonard Fournette has become a legitimate top 10 NFL running back again,
good
leads
call.
Me to believe that I know this is kind of going to be, everyone's going to point to, this is a game Buffalo has to save their season. They have to win this game, get the season back on the right track. No. Every data point we've gotten from Buffalo this year against good teams, except for Kansas City in week 5 when the Chiefs were in the middle of their spurt where they forgot how football worked, Buffalo's gotten beat by every good team on their schedule.
Yeah, this is 3 extra juice consensus. We're showing a 3.5,
yeah,
so you can still find the 3s extra juice.
There's still
juice.
3 minus 20 at a whole bunch of
whole
places.
Bunch of places. I actually see a 3 minus 1, but 3 minus 120 is the consensus right now. That's actually a good call, Jeff. Like, now after seeing what you saw, and again, it was inclement weather, but we've seen the Bills now against nobody. They haven't played anybody all year. They've been struggling. They lost to the Jaguars. They were soft in that game. They should have won that game last night. They couldn't do it. They're really going to cover this against the Bucs?
I don't see it either.
I think, again,
Buffalo has come up short against every reasonable team they played this year except for Kansas City. That's the only reasonable team they've defeated this year.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I like this. I like the Bucs here, laying the 3. New England is off. Final week of bye, so we don't have another game to get to.
New England, Indy are both off this week, and they play each other the following Saturday, which that will be...
Saturday NFL, baby.
Look, that game actually is going to set the course for the rest of the AFC playoffs. It's also going to set the course, Gil, for your Indianapolis Colts futures, because if the Colts lose that game, their path gets very narrow to sneak into the playoffs.
It's going to set the course for adventure is what it's going to do, Jeff.
Sure is.
I love my Colts future. I love the Titans. Again, the Titans future is based on them getting the number 1 seed. Still very possible. Titans right now, the number 2 seed. Getting Julio Jones back. A.J. Brown's right around the corner. 6 weeks on Derrick Henry is next week's game. Remember, the Derrick Henry prognosis was 6 to 8 weeks optimistically, more likely 8 to 10 weeks. But we're already going to be at the 6-week mark next week. So don't kid yourself. That's still alive. And their hard games are behind them. But the Colts, I'm telling you, watch this in-game, this in-season Hard Knocks. It's so good. I think the Colts are absolutely the sneaky, freaky brother sneaking in from the rear. That is a team that is built for the postseason. And you're right about that game against New England. Give me the points, because New England's going to be, where is that game? That's in
Indy. I don't know what that line's going to be. I would right now, I guess Indy minus one.
I would. I think Indy's going to be a slight favorite.
Slight favorite.
Give me Indy.
Big game, huge game. A week from, they're obviously off this week, but a week from Saturday. Looking ahead, I know we're basically out of time. I know it's Seattle laying a ton of points on the road, but I think the Houston Texans are completely dead.
How bad is Houston that Seattle is a 7.5 point or 8 point road favorite? God bless. And again, Mac Jones throwing 3 forward passes yesterday, completing 2 for 19 yards, had a 4.3 total QBR. Tyrod Taylor's total QBR on Sunday, 2.7. 3 forward pass attempts beat that. Jeez. We got to run. Lombardi Line next. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.